Welcome to Jason Powell's Pro Wrestling Boom Podcast, a production of ProWrestling.net. Get ready for the latest news, analysis, and interviews featuring big names from the world of pro wrestling. Here comes the boom!
The Minnesota Vikings. Check out Paul Sports Talk Radio Show on KFAN.com. It's another busy week in pro wrestling, of course. AEW Revolution taking place on Sunday night. The show's headlined by a 60-minute Iron Man match with Bryan Danielson challenging MJF for the AEW World Championship. Join me for my live review of Revolution on Sunday night at ProWrestling.net, starting with the pre-show, which is expected to start at 6 Central, and the main card at 7 Central, 8 Eastern Time. And with Revolution taking place on Sunday, that means Pro Wrestling Boom Live returns on Monday at 1 Central, 2 Eastern Time at PWAudio.net. Sean Plichta is back in the co-host chair and will be taking your calls coming out of the first AEW pay-per-view event of 2023. And if you can't call the show live, you can always email me your questions. .netjason@gmail.com. Spell it out. dotnetjason@gmail.com. I'm sure we're going to be AEW heavy that day, but any pro wrestling related current events questions are welcome. We're taking a different approach today on The Boom. Ring of Honor is back. Well, the Tony Khan owned version of Ring of Honor is back anyway. And they started their weekly streaming series by debuting behind the Honor Club paywall on Thursday night. I checked it out today and did a brief report, kind of a scaled-down report at ProWrestling.net with the idea that I would give you guys my extended thoughts on this first episode here on The Boom today. And it's going to be an interesting run for Ring of Honor on Honor Club. This is a different approach for them, and it comes at a time when there is so much wrestling content available. I've been talking about this. If you have the right cable package or right cable system, whenever that AEW All Access show debuts sometime in March, there's going to be pro wrestling-related content on broadcast or fairly basic cable available Sunday night through Friday night in every primetime hour. So 7 to 10 Central and then 8 to 11 Eastern. That is insane. And I'll give you the rundown. It's A&E, the biography shows on Sunday night. It's not your traditional pro wrestling show, but it's still pro wrestling content. Raw, of course, on Mondays, NXT on Tuesdays, MLW Underground after that, and we'll see how long that lasts. We know that they have at least 4 more episodes to go, and we'll see if they stick around longer, but nonetheless, it's going to be happening in March that they'll still be around when that All Access show starts. And then Dynamite on Wednesday, followed by All Access, whenever that launch is. Thursday is Impact Wrestling, followed by New Japan Pro Wrestling on Access. And I know not everyone gets Access, but nonetheless, it is available. And then, of course, Friday nights is SmackDown, followed by AEW Rampage. That's not counting New Japan Pro Wrestling, or the NWA, or GCW, or just pick any of the various pro wrestling promotions out there that are running either on, in some streaming fashion. That's not counting Ring of Honor on Honor Club behind the paywall or AEW's Dark and Dark Elevation on YouTube. I've never seen anything like this. I grew up during a pro wrestling boom in the Hogan era, and it just spawned all sorts of shows, and I thought it was like the most I'd ever see because we had a block on Saturday nights. Mick Karch's Saturday night at ringside in the Twin Cities combined with all the other promotions that we could watch on various channels, and I thought that would be the peak of it. I never thought we'd reach a point where we'd be as flooded as we are. And I bring all of this up because I do think it's going to be tough for Ring of Honor to get people to pay the, just under $10 subscription price to subscribe to Honor Club for this show. And I think that's part of the reason that this show is as long as it is. Tony Khan has always been kind of a more is more guy. You know, we've talked about his pay-per-views going longer than I think a lot of us would like them to at sometimes. And he took a question about that in his media session this week and just kind of pointed out, well, one show is long because of the NBA finals, but otherwise, and just kind of neglected the fact that, no, people think your shows are too long in general, Tony. But with this show, I kind of understand. You know, you are trying to really cater to an audience that is mostly going to be hardcore. And I know everybody watches wrestling different. Just because I need to keep up on everything doesn't mean everybody else is trying to. So you might be somebody that watches AEW Dynamite and only Ring of Honor Honor Club, because maybe there's some history with Ring of Honor that you love or what have you, and you want to support it. Or maybe you watch SmackDown in Honor Club. You know, everybody's got kind of a different combination. But it's just, I think you're appealing to a niche audience, asking them to pay for something behind a paywall, and giving them a good show for the first, you know, the first episode. But you got to get them in the door to get them excited about this. And I think that's going to be difficult when there's just so much competition out there. One thing about AEW's fan base, though, is they seem to be incredibly loyal and willing to spend, as we see with their pay-per-view numbers. So maybe that helps. The other thing about all of this is that I do have to remind myself that Tony Khan's not playing by the basic rules of business, the traditional rules, if you will, where I don't think that he is looking at Ring of Honor as he must make money or break even with this. He may be looking at this as, even though this is a little bit of a different setup where he put this in his name, where the AEW promotion, I think, is more of a different setup. So Tony is like the exclusive owner of Ring of Honor. I don't believe technically his father has any ownership of it like he does with the AEW promotion. So it's structured a little differently, but just seeing the way this is being set up, I'm guessing that, yeah, Tony's not afraid to take a loss on this. And for that matter, it's just as WWE isn't afraid to take a loss on the Performance Center and NXT. So it's, when I say it's not the basic business setup, you know, he's not the only one playing by those rules. And what's, you know, I mean, obviously, his family are multi-billionaires, so he can afford to take the loss, where if this was somebody had bought Ring of Honor with the idea that we must be profitable, I don't think they'd be going with this current arrangement. I really don't. I think the Honor Club approach would be risky. I think just the bloated roster, even, I mean, my God, it's a combination of people he has signed with AEW as well, and it's still a pretty bloated roster. And then the big expense is running at Universal Studios. I've heard people give me various rental prices on just what it costs to run there, or leasing, whatever, however that works. And so I don't really have firm numbers for you, because I've just heard different numbers from different people. But it's not cheap. It's expensive. And so, yeah, if you add it all up, I think that if this were a situation where Tony were trying to at least break even and make a profit in the short term, things might be very different. Maybe he is, and maybe because of that, the approach will change if it's not successful. I don't know. As somebody who does watch way too much wrestling because of what I do, I would rather see them scale back a little bit on the length of the show. I like the pacing of this more than I do your typical AEW Dynamite or Rampage, where it's just, I mean, go, 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 and they're cramming things in. Even though this show didn't have commercial breaks, the pacing felt pretty good. There were some things on the show that just didn't feel like they needed to be there. I do think it might be a bit of a minor mistake to start by giving people two-hour shows. If I were in Tony's position, I probably would have started with a 60 to 75-minute show. Again, there's no commercial breaks. I mean, they're working in some ads for their things, but it's not like your typical show where you go to a commercial or even a picture-in-picture. There's none of that. So I think 60 to 75 would have been a good start. And if there's an outcry for more, okay, then maybe I give it to them. Maybe I give it to those fans if I sense they're in the majority and it's not just the super fans who can't get enough and will watch wrestling 24 hours a day. Because I think when people hear, oh, it's 2 hours minus commercials, I do think that's going to scare some people off, believe it or not, that are getting their wrestling fix elsewhere. Maybe if it was a one-hour show, they might be able to go, okay, I can cram another hour in. I like Ring of Honor. That may now be hesitant going, I don't have 2 hours a week for this without commercial breaks to dedicate. I don't know. And the reason I would have started with fewer, I think it's much easier to add time than it is to establish, hey, we're a two-hour show, give or take, and it's only one episode, but if that's just based on the tapings that they did and seeing how many matches they did, I have a feeling this is kind of what they're going for, is roughly 2 hours per week without commercials. And I just think I would have started smaller. And because I think it's easier to add than it is to take away, I think you do run the risk of upsetting some people that want the 2 hours. You've given it to them, and now all of a sudden you're going, yeah, we're going to pull back. They are going to be more likely to be upset, where if you start by giving them whatever you establish and they want more. I don't think personally it's a bad thing to leave them wanting more. But again, if you kind of get the feeling that, okay, people want a little more bang for their buck, give it to them then. But yeah, it's just, it feels like it's a bit overwhelming. And again, I know I watch wrestling a little bit differently than most people do, where they're picking and choosing more than I have the luxury of doing with the job that I have. With all of that said, let's kind of work our way through this show. As I mentioned, I did kind of a stripped down review of this. There's so much wrestling, I don't even know if I'm going to do this on a weekly basis. I may do a search to see if there's somebody that's interested in covering this show for the site, or maybe I'll give up another show that I'm covering to cover this one. I don't know yet. It's so hard to keep up with all the content that's out there, and we do our damnedest. So I guess if anybody's listening that's really interested in doing this on a weekly basis, you can always hit me up by email, and we'll go from there. But yeah, it was a good show overall, the good wrestling you would expect, the familiar voices of Ian Riccaboni and Caprice Coleman on commentary, and Bobby Cruz as the ring announcer. It feels like the only person kind of left out that was in a meaningful position from the old Ring of Honor, aside from, I guess, Delirious, the booker, who hasn't was not involved in this, is Todd Sinclair, the referee, who also worked behind the scenes on the creative team, I believe. He's been nowhere to be found on any of these. That's kind of strange. Paul Turner, who was with Ring of Honor for a long time and moved to AEW, was on the show as a referee as well. My first take was that it looks slick from a production standpoint. They made the Universal Studios look pretty good. Maybe a little too slick for my taste when it comes to Ring of Honor. I just kind of like, they're a little grittier, but I can't blame them for taking full advantage of the production capabilities that they have. So they went to another familiar face in the first match. It was Mark Briscoe defeating Slim J, who had Mark Sterling and Ari Daivari in his corner. And this went longer than it needed to, in my opinion. Slim J, talented guy, but he spent most of his time on the AEW YouTube shows, a little bit on Rampage, and he just kept kicking out of all of Mark's signature moves. It did lead to Mark winning with his late brother Jay's J-Driller finisher. So I can appreciate that, but I just didn't need to see this go as long as it did. But yeah, nice to see Mark in that opening match. It felt like Ring of Honor, considering who was handling the introductions, who was in the ring with Mark Briscoe, and who was calling the show. They went backstage where Tony Deppen was interviewed by Lexi Nair in a backstage set. Nothing against Lexi, but I do associate her with AEW. If it's going to be kind of a regular thing that she's only going to be doing Ring of Honor, okay, you know, in time, I'll start to feel like, okay, she's a Ring of Honor person. If she's going to be bouncing back and forth, I'd rather see them find someone. Of course, they lost Quinn McKay, who now works for the NXT promotion, and really they haven't taken full advantage of her. She works as Kelly Kincaid. Man, was she ever good at her job in Ring of Honor. But Deppen ended up reading a prepared statement that he had written about how he would do the unthinkable by defeating Samoa Joe by pinfall or submission next week. Okay. And then they went to the second match of the night, which saw The Kingdom, Matt Taven, and Mike Bennett with Maria Kanellis defeating The Infantry, Sean Dean, and Carly Bravo. And again, The Kingdom, ROH, royalty, if you will, but certainly they've had a long history in Ring of Honor. They were doing the Code of Honor, by the way. It was blown off in the very first match when Slim J didn't do it. In most of the other matches, they were doing it. In this one, it was The Kingdom hitting their Proton Pack finisher and Bennett pinning Bravo. It was a pretty good tag match. Dean and Bravo feel very developmental at this point, especially as a team, where they were trying to do some moves early that, you know, you're doing stereo-style moves, and they just seemed a little bit off. Not a ton. And I think it's, you know, if they get more time, which this show should give them, then I think they'll be a little more polished. But the Kingdom duo is very good. As much as I like Taven and Bennett as a team, it is a little bit frustrating to see Matt Taven, a former ROH World Champion, spending all of his time in a tag team. I know it wasn't the hottest run, that's for sure. We can say what we will about Matt Taven's run as the ROH Champion, but he's still a talented guy. And I really looked forward to him leaving the Ring of Honor ecosystem, going somewhere where someone was going to work with him and maybe shake up the act a little bit and bring out just something fresh out of him. And instead, it's just kind of, well, you're back in the tag team with Mike Bennett and doing The Kingdom again. It's like things just never seem to completely change with Matt Taven. Then we had a video package on the New Japan Pro Wrestling TV title match, and Blake Christian, the challenger, was talking about his all-heart nickname and said he would beat Zack Sabre Jr. to win the title. And then Sabre checked in, and they weren't shown, you know, they weren't in the same place. It was Sabre just checking in with his part of the video. He did let everybody know it was a 15-minute time limit and suggested that Christian use those minutes wisely while in the ring with the best technical wrestler in the world. I felt like they got across what they needed to here, with Sabre coming off as arrogant, Christian fairly likable, which conflicts with his current heel gimmick on the independent scene, but also just getting over the 15 minutes without just coming right out and having to say, like, it's a 15-minute time limit, which I'm sure the ring announcer did anyway, but just kind of explaining the rules through the course of the promo in a way that felt natural rather than just kind of forcing it in the other way. The match itself was entertaining. No mystery here regarding the outcome for me anyway. It was Zack Sabre Jr. defeating Blake Christian to retain the New Japan Pro Wrestling TV title. But yeah, good match with Christian going for a top rope move, Sabre catching him in a submission hold on the way down and getting the tap out win. And they did adhere to the code of honor with an intense stare down afterward. Of note during this match was at one point Sabre on the apron, as he had gotten the better of Christian, got cocky, looked into the camera, and asked Brian if he was watching, and then said that he's the best technical wrestler in the world. And Brian Danielson and Zack Sabre Jr., I would assume, are going to be meeting maybe at Supercard of Honor. If not, then I would think at the next Forbidden Door show. Up to this point, that was the best match of the show by far. Granted, it was only the third match, but still very good. Then we went to Nair interviewing Mark Sterling. It was accompanied by Ari Daivari, and Sterling tried to talk Konosuke Takeshita into calling off his match with Josh Woods. Sterling offered Takeshita 45% of the winner's purse, pointing out that he would get his cut. And then Daivari said he'd throw in another $10,000. Why, I don't know. Takeshita looked at the contract and then tore it up and walked away. Everything with Sterling is too tongue-in-cheek and just campy. I think he's a talented guy, and I don't know if this is his style or if this is the way he's always written in AEW and Ring of Honor, but I do wish that it was more of a heat-seeking manager rather than always being the butt of the joke. And he's just that manager you roll your eyes at more than anything. And Daivari doing this rich guy gimmick, I don't know. Maybe I've seen too much of him on the Minnesota Indies to really buy it, but that's just it. I'm not buying it. And then we went to a Christopher Daniels video. He talked about how he was on the first ROH show and is still in the thick of things all these years later. So anyone who stands in his way better say their prayers. Then he defeated Rohit Raju at Jorah Joel in his corner, winning with the best moonsault ever. Daniels being back in Ring of Honor and being an executive in AEW, you know, no surprise here. I do hope that they get more out of Raju in Ring of Honor. I hope he becomes a regular there. This guy was in so many different things in Impact Wrestling, and if you've listened to me long enough, you know I'm not always great. I'm not always the biggest fan of the wacky, silly, over-the-top comedy. He did that really well. There were times when, even though it wasn't my style, I could still appreciate what he was doing, and then he also could play a serious role well. This guy's versatile, and I've been disappointed by just how underwhelming it's been for him since he left Impact Wrestling. Now, I don't know, maybe he's working the schedule he wants, but I did think that he was impressive enough in Impact that AEW or somebody was going to give him a shot when he announced that he wasn't re-signing with Impact. And for that matter, I'm surprised that Impact, when things didn't work out, hasn't brought him back, because he really is a talented guy. Then we went to Rhett Titus and Tracy Williams, who were interviewed by Lexi Nair on the backstage set. They talked about climbing the mountaintop and restoring honor. And so nothing has changed with these guys since the last time we saw them on Ring of Honor television, basically. Aussie Open, Kyle Fletcher and Mark Davis showed up at the end of the promo. Fletcher said there's no better team in ROH than they are, Aussie Open. He offered to face them in a match next week and said that they would shake their hands prior to the match, as long as Titus and Williams agreed to shake their hands after when they lose. And the teams did shake hands to make that official. So, yeah, little things like this. I wish we had more promo time on the show. Maybe we'll get more as things move forward. But they were pretty good about making sure they were setting some things up for next week or even beyond. And good to see Aussie Open as part of this. And for that matter, I mean, good to see Titus and Williams. I joke about how nothing's changed, because, I mean, that's what they were. It was the must-have honor guys back in the day. But really talented guys. Tracy Williams is one that I... You know, Rhett was just so closely associated with ROH, and he was kind of an undercard guy there for most of his time. He did have the successful run with Kenny King as a tag team way back when. But I thought Tracy Williams would be more active post Ring of Honor than he has been. So hopefully this works out for him. Then we moved on to the fifth match of the night, which was a gem. It was Konosuke Takeshita defeating Josh Woods, who had Mark Sterling in his corner. Good finish. Takeshita went for a German suplex late. Woods countered into a roll-up and got a good near fall into that. But then Takeshita came right back with the wheelbarrow German suplex and got the pin. I'm not even doing this justice. They worked really hard. Takeshita special. I've said this before. I'll say it again. You know, the idea that Don Callis is scouting him. I think, look, if they've got a great idea in mind, cool. But to me, it suggests that Don Callis, the heel, is going to turn Takeshita heel and manage him. I just think Takeshita is so over for his babyface work and his in-ring work is so crowd-pleasing that I hope that's not what they have in mind. Because I just think that there's something special here with him as a babyface, and I wouldn't run the risk of turning people off by having him be aligned with Callis. Again, you know, I'm willing to see it through because Callis is a talented guy as well. I don't know that I would monkey with what they have going on with Takeshita. And Josh Woods, talented guy, you know, another Ring of Honor holdover. We've learned nothing about his character since he left Ring of Honor, and that's been disappointing. He is, I think, a former amateur wrestler, and he's done some MMA fighting. I've interviewed him here on The Boom. And, I think that there's something there, but we got to get to know who this guy is as a personality, what makes him tick. And that plays in perfectly to what I'm going to talk about here in a little bit when it comes to AR Fox. I'll just say, same thing. First, we heard from Claudio Castagnoli, who was defending the title against Fox. And he brought up how Fox may have cost him money on AEW television, but nothing would spoil his first title defense on the new Honor Club show. So he's referencing that, what was it, Three Kings Trios thing they did that I think most of us have forgotten, and for good reason. I mean, the match may have been your typical spot fest exciting match, whatever, but it was just kind of a goofy gimmick. And these monetary things that they do in wrestling, I just don't think, since the Million Dollar Man, I don't think they've been all that effective. It's just like a wrestler's going to win a battle royal for $50,000. Like, okay, great. No one believes it. The $50,000 is real, or whether it's $500 or $1 million, you just kind of roll your eyes at it. And so that's how I was with that stipulation. The sixth match was the Embassy, Brian Cage, Toa Leona, and Khan with Prince Nana defeating Joe Keys, Alex Lawless, and LSG in a non-title match. The Embassy are the six-man tag team champions. This was just a showcase, basically. Leona and Khan ended up tossing LSG to Cage, who powerbombed him on the way down and pinned him. So Keys was a guy that was coming out of the ROH camp, I believe, and was getting some television time at one point. And LSG, Leon St. Giovanni, a talented guy who just never quite got the push in Ring of Honor, either as a singles wrestler or as part of the coast-to-coast tag team with Shaheem Ali. I guess I wasn't surprised to see him lose here, but he's always a guy that I just think there's something there, and hopefully, you know, somebody will give this guy a chance creatively, but it doesn't look like they have plans for him. You know, it's one match. I don't want to read too much into it. This was just, again, a showcase match. It didn't need to be on the show. If I was going to cut some things from the show, this would have been one of them. And it's not, you can have a showcase match or two. That's okay, because I do think it helps with the flow of the show. So I'm not saying like this was terrible and it didn't belong. But if I wanted to trim some time, this would have been one of the matches I would have considered. Or, you know, again, if there's room for one or two of them, maybe it would have been fine being on the show. But it really didn't add anything other than just kind of remind people who the six-man champions are. And speaking of character development, I've seen Prince Nana for years, and I don't know what we're supposed to make of him. And then for that matter, I mean, Brian Cage, I kind of get the idea. I don't know what to think of Khan and Toa Leona. I want to hear more from them. I want them to actually be characters and not just, you know, random guys in this muscle-bound six-man team. Then we heard from, actually it was a video package on Metalik. He's no longer going by Grand Metalik. The Grand is gone. And he was facing Ari Daivari in the seventh match. Ari had Mark Sterling and Slim J in his corner. And this is one where I would say the only match of the night that I would not have predicted the outcome correctly. another issue I had with this show. It's just a little too predictable. And even in saying that, you know, Metalik still got a visual pinfall. There was a spot where the referee was distracted by, who was it? I think it was, Metalik rolled up Daivari, got a visual pinfall, but Daivari was able to kick out because the referee started his count so late because he was being distracted by Sterling. And that allowed Daivari, while Metalik was protesting with the referee, to hit him with a clothesline finisher and get the pin. So, yeah, I mean, not a hot moment for Metalik. He gets part of his WWE name back, and he's losing to Ari Daivari. He got a visual pinfall, but, yeah, none of this really did a lot for me. And, again, some of it is I think Ari Daivari, as he is was previously known, is a talented guy, another one, you know, another good wrestler. And I've seen him a lot over the years work independence and do dark matches and things. But this gimmick, this Trust Busters thing that Tony Khan came up with, they already took Parker Boudreaux out of it. And Tony seemed like he was really excited about it when this thing launched. I don't see it. And if you're already pulling Parker Boudreaux from it, is that a sign that whatever Khan saw it originally, he's kind of cooled on it himself? If he has, get this rich guy thing away from Daivari and come up with something fresh for him. Up next was AR Fox, the challenger in the main event, being interviewed by Lexi Nair. And he said he tried out for Ring of Honor about 10 years ago and wasn't invited back. He said maybe he wasn't good enough, so he started busting his ass to be the best he could. And now he's in the main event, and he's coming for that title. Okay, we see AR Fox on AEW quite a bit now. He's been teaming with the Martins to go against the Elite. And he's an impressive wrestler, no doubt about it. And I've seen him around over the years. I don't know who he is and what makes him tick. You know, another guy where even this promo, okay, if you don't know anything about AR Fox, say you've never seen him before, well, you learn that he tried out 10 years ago and wasn't invited back, and then he went and worked hard on the indies. It's something. It's not enough, because I've been watching this guy now for, I don't know, for years. That's the only thing I know about him, too. And so he caught you up on the character. And maybe there's been, you know, independent places that he's worked where he's had more of a character than he does now. But I want so many of these people just to develop actual personas. I think it's as simple as asking these guys, who is AR Fox in this case? And having, you know, make him tell, you know, who are you? What is your character? And go through that exercise. And I think some of them would be maybe surprised to learn, like, there's really nothing to my character. I'm just another independent wrestler. And I'm not even trying to pick on Fox, because maybe there is more layers to this than I realize with him, again, established elsewhere. But I do think that unless you start to establish who these guys are and give fans more of a reason to care, they just kind of become interchangeable. You might like one guy more in the ring than another or something, but it's just not enough. And I'm hoping that Ring of Honor will have more mic time and things to kind of help establish some of who these people are. Eighth match didn't need to be on the show. Madison Rayne and Sky Blue beating Charlotte Renegade and Robin Renegade. It wasn't a very good match. Just felt like I was watching AEW Dark. And just like there's no women's tag titles. And so in AEW or Ring of Honor, and so it's like, why are there women's tag teams anyway? That's always kind of like, you're a women's tag team in a company with no women's titles. And I'm not calling for AEW or Ring of Honor to add women's tag titles. I think AEW has more than enough titles, and I don't know that, I mean, you could at some point. One of the readers just suggested the idea of getting rid of the TBS title, merging it basically with the TNT title, and coming up with women's tag titles. And I mean, had they done that instead, had they established there's one singles title for the women and tag titles, and the person suggested the opposite, like, we're going to get rid of the tag titles and come up with a TBS title, secondary title, I would have said no. But I also told him no when it came to this, because I just don't need more confusion with another added title. Even if you're taking one away, I just think that it's, when it comes to Willow, or not Willow, but Jade Cargill, the TBS champion, she's just been so dominant. I think whenever that title is taken from her, I would define it as kind of the secondary championship then. It's tough to make it feel like a secondary championship when your champion is dominant and has never lost a match, and your other title has changed hands a bunch of times. Anyway, I digress. Then we had a brief Dalton Castle teaser. He'll be on next week's show. Then Ian Riccaboni stood in the ring and introduced Pure Champion Wheeler Yuta. And Yuta came out in street clothes and had his title belt around his waist, and Riccaboni brought up the main event. And in the process called Yuta a junior member of the Blackpool Combat Club. And Yuta took exception to that, said he's not a junior member, he's a champion, damn it. And he talked about how he surrounded himself with three of the best wrestlers of all time, and Moxley and Danielson and Claudio. And he said they beat him down and forged him in combat. And then he said that he was willing to defend his title against anyone on next week's show. And that led to Timothy Thatcher making his entrance. And Thatcher stood on the stage and said he might not be big on talking, but he is big on fighting. And he accepted that challenge. So Thatcher, Yuta, Pure Rules Championship match for next week. That looks really good on paper if you're into that style, which I am. And so I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, the junior member. There was nothing heelish here aside from Yuta taking exception to that, if you count that, which I don't. Like, they've never said he's the junior member, but yeah, so I can't really blame his character for being upset, but it may have been a little tease that these guys are getting a little more edgy, if you will, a little more heelish, as we've seen on AEW television, and there may have been one more hint that we'll get to. Then they went to a brief video that hyped TNT champion and ROH TV champion Samoa Joe appearing next week. Ninth match was Willow Nightingale beating Lady Frost. Willow caught Frost charging in the corner and performed a gut-wrench powerbomb on her and got the three count. And then they shook hands and hugged afterward. And then Willow was interviewed by Riccaboni afterward, and he actually teased dancing. And then he laughed and said that Willow's his wife's favorite wrestler. And Ian asked Willow what's next for her. She pointed out that she won her last two ROH pay-per-view matches and said she's on a roll and thinks it's time that she challenges Athena for the women's title. Well, that led to Athena making her entrance, and she spoke from the stage and congratulated Willow on her win and said that Willow was happy to be there. Athena said she wouldn't be champion if she was just happy to be there, but she accepted Willow's challenge for next week and then healed it up. I was surprised that they made this match for next week. We'll see. I mean, maybe it's going to be more of an angle than a match. I just thought that would be the match at the Supercard of Honor show, WrestleMania weekend. So it's possible that whatever they do next week does indeed lead to that match taking place at Supercard of Honor. But if it's not, I just wonder what they have in mind. If they're bringing somebody in for Athena, I'm just not sure what that would be. Main event was given 15, 17 minutes, somewhere in there. Didn't exactly time it, but they were given a good amount of time. Claudio Castagnoli defeating AR Fox to retain the ROH championship. Good match. The finish saw Fox going for a springboard move, but Claudio catching him with an uppercut and pinning him. And I liked the match. I just never bought into the idea that Fox was going to beat Claudio to win the title, in part because, again, I don't feel like I know anything about AR Fox's character. And then afterward, Claudio stood in the ring and applauded while looking down at Fox and picked him up and shook his hand. I'm like, well, this isn't the aggressive Claudio we've been seeing lately on Ring of Honor television. Well, then Eddie Kingston made his entrance. So the mystery is over. I laughed. I had nothing against the person. I don't even remember who asked the question, but somebody asked Tony Khan in his media call, have you talked to Eddie Kingston? Because Kingston had put, they did a social media interview with him where he quit AEW, and they played it on the AEW social media page. So if he's really quitting, do you think they're going to? Well, this person did ask if Tony Khan had spoken, wondering, like, what's up with Eddie Kingston? Is he really quitting? And he didn't put it that way. I'm embellishing a bit. But even Tony's kind of like, I guess you'll just have to keep watching all different pro wrestling. And sure enough, Eddie Kingston showed up. And Fox was lying down on the next to the ring steps. And Kingston did lean down and slapped his hand. And then he entered the ring and informed Claudio that he is an independent contractor, which allows him to be there. He recalled telling Jon Moxley that he wouldn't beat Claudio's ass in AEW, and then he added, but this ain't AEW, bro. I'm coming for that championship. And then there was an Eddie chant that broke out, and Kingston told Claudio not to be scared, and he handed him the microphone for a rebuttal, but Claudio dropped the mic and left the ring, kind of stood on the apron, and looked like he was rolling his eyes, basically, at Kingston. So they're a little heelish here. And then went to the stage and put the title around his waist and then looked back and nodded at Kingston and went to the back. And Eddie was grumbling as he left the ring and was slapping hands with fans on the way to the backstage area, and then the broadcast team just closed the show by advertising the title matches for next week. So Eddie Kingston in Ring of Honor. I think it's a good move to a point. I'm very high on what Kingston brings to the table. I just think he's a special personality that stands out. Now, I don't have to work with Eddie behind the scenes. You know, he's even kind of alluded to some things that maybe it is difficult. And, you know, I don't know how much there was to him and the MJF thing, if they were just working or what. But that came up on Mark Barron's show. But, you know, there have been other issues with Eddie. But I do think he's a really unique personality, and the fans love this guy. And when he's featured prominently, everything he does seems to get over because he is a good talker and he's so believable in what he does when it comes to his mic work. I think he'd be the perfect opponent for MJF somewhere down the road. But Tony Khan also, you know, if there is legit issues there, I can understand Tony going, eh. All I know is that Eddie's been criminally wasted lately on the main roster, if you will, on AEW's roster. The thing with Ortiz has been laughably bad. I don't know what they're going for. It's just been terrible. And so the fact that he's just being pulled, apparently, from AEW television and moving to Ring of Honor, hey, it'll give him a chance to come back fresh. And not that, you know, I think you could just insert Eddie Kingston into something hot at the pay-per-view and people would take to it. I really do. But if, you know, hey, there's nothing wrong with just disappearing for a little bit, doing your thing in Ring of Honor, I would assume that this match is going to headline Super Card of Honor between, you know, Claudio and Kingston for the ROH Championship. And that's a good match to close the show with and a good World Championship match. They just kind of assume, though, that everybody's familiar with their history when it comes to this feud that started on the Indies. And I remember them alluding to this when they were, when I think it was Claudio first arrived on AEW television. And I'm like, what happened again? I mean, they just don't do a great job of really laying that out. And it's one, I'm sure the broadcast team will. It's, you know, something Ian Riccaboni is really good at, is just kind of telling everybody, bringing them up to speed on things. I don't know that it's enough. I hope it's not too much focus on what's happened in the past between them. If you need to touch on it just to satisfy that long-term fan, great. Make it fresh. And with Claudio, you know, I mentioned maybe a little bit, it wasn't the aggressive side, but the fact that he was so dismissive of Kingston, is that kind of playing into the little more, like I say, it feels like Blackpool Combat Club, with the exception of Danielson, has been a little more heelish lately, with Claudio and Wheeler especially. Moxley, I think he could turn any time. But yeah, I don't know if this is just kind of, he's dismissive of Kingston as a character and I shouldn't read into this, or if they are trying to kind of tie things together. I'm not sure. And it will be interesting to see when it comes to this match, do they try to steer people in one direction or the other? Kingston to me is the natural babyface. I mean, can he work heel? Yes, but people love the guy. And Claudio, he's been a babyface, but if Blackpool Combat Club or several members are turning, I think it works pretty well. They can also just put them out there. It is Ring of Honor. Cheer for whoever you like. But yeah, we'll see. I think that's going to be one to watch here. Maybe even, you know, with this weekend's AEW Revolution pay-per-view. But that was the show, and overall, I did enjoy it. Like I said, there was some fat they could have trimmed from this just to scale back on the time a little bit without disrupting the flow. I don't need this to be just a crazy hour of nonstop action like we get with Rampage, for instance, or sometimes a little too much even on Dynamite. I think that it's important to let things breathe a little bit. And they did that on this show, maybe a little too much. I just don't know that this show needs to be as long as it is. And if you're going to, if there's any thought of keeping it a little bit briefer, I think now's the time to do that again before you really establish to people that, hey, this is a two-hour show per week. And then if you want to pull back, you're going to upset some of the people who just can't get enough. You could easily just look at it and go, well, week one was 2 hours. We never told you that it was going to be that way every week. I might start scaling back now and just get rid of some of the showcase matches that are fine, but also, do they really need to be there? That's my approach. But I am going to keep an eye on this. Like I said, I don't know if I'm going to find time to cover this week in and week out and do an audio review and everything. We'll see. How that works out. But I am going to be, you know, at least if nothing else, have it on while I'm working and things. I'm not just going to not watch the product at all. So I will be keeping tabs on it, and we'll go from there. You know, we'll just kind of take that approach with it. If you are interested in this show, of course, check out the Ring of Honor website. Again, it's behind the paywall. Honor Club is what they're calling it. Still, I think there's it's under like watchroh.com or something, but you can just go to the regular Ring of Honor website and all that information is there. I had to sign up again today under the new system, and it was nice and easy, very smooth. And you can, if you have Roku, for instance, you can watch it on your TV. That's what I did. Believe me, if this was watch the computer monitor for 2 hours, I would have passed. But knowing that I could watch it on Roku and watch it on my actual television made it easy for me. Hey, I'm an old guy, folks. Join me for my live review of AEW Revolution on Sunday night at ProWrestling.net. Pro Wrestling Boom Live returns Monday at 1 Central 2 Eastern at PWAudio.net. A big thanks to me for hosting, and thank you for listening. Stop back and we'll do it again live on Monday on The Boom.